I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it? The other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Rusmanel. And I'm your host. On today's program, an important vote on November 4th is coming up. But it's not the vote you're thinking of. It's at the FCC. We'll be talking about that with Matthew Lazar in just a moment. So yes, while most of the nation is going to be sitting there on the edge of their seats or standing in line to register their votes in the national presidential election and other races, the Federal Communications Commission is going to be meeting to talk about what may really be the future of our internet. And so with me here is Matthew Lazar, our man watching the FCC. Thanks for joining me again, Matthew. What we're talking about here is a concept called white spaces, which is part of the broadcast spectrum, which is soon to be vacant, or in a lot of cases really already is vacant, that might be put to other uses. And there's some thoughts, in fact, a proposal from the FCC that this might be used for a wireless broadband service. And this is something that you've been covering quite a bit with your pieces, which you write for the geek news website, I might call it, tech news website, Ars Technica. And so maybe, Matthew, you can tell us a little bit more about and fill in the gritty details that I'm missing here.
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't say that I've written a lot about white space for Ars Technica. The person who has written the most in-depth articles at Ars Technica on this is Nathan C. Anderson, Nate Anderson, who wrote a wonderful article about a couple of wonderful in-depth articles about the technology issues around white space, and I just want to acknowledge that. You should definitely go to Ars Technica and read his stories. My latest story is, of course, about the fact that 110 famous rock and roll stars signed a petition against white space, including Rob Zombie. Rob Zombie is at the end. I guess he's not a rock and roll star. I don't know sure what Rob Zombie is, but for some reason or other. And I hate to be going against Rob Zombie on this issue, but I guess I am. Anyway, as you mentioned, starting around 2006, 2005, technology people began noticing that since the TV bands in the 700 megahertz area were going to be abandoned, auctioned off pretty soon, which they have been, or most of it has been in March of this year, that this space would be available for other uses. And this is really good band for this area. Some areas of it are really good band for, since they're being vacated by the TV channels, or much of it, they're really good areas for broadband transmission. And a lot of that's going to be been bought up by the wireless companies, but a bunch of it has not been bought up by the wireless companies. And that area would be, as I just said, good for broadband transmission. And now there's technology which can pretty accurately, or more or less accurately, depending on what kind of technology you use, sense when those TV channels are being temporarily unused. That is to say, when there's no signal running on those TV channels. And that phenomenon is called white space. It's basically temporary unused TV channel areas. And there are all kinds of devices now that can pick up where that white space is. Spectrum sensor devices, satellite geolocation devices can also do it. There's a lot of different ways to pick that up, and people began saying, basically the device manufacturers, and we'll get to who those are in a little while, the electronic device manufacturers can say, you know, we could build devices that would allow people to send and receive broadband via these unlicensed white space, via these white space areas. And this would be much more powerful, much better spectrum than Wi-Fi. We're talking about much more powerful transmission, We're talking about a much more powerful service.
And when you talk about powerful, you mean like as in you can cover more area? Because I know a lot of people probably experience with Wi-Fi, it's easy to lose a signal.
You can cover a lot more area, big canopies of area, of area. And this would be a particularly good thing for rural areas where a large portion of which have lost out on the broadband revolution. And there's a whole lot of rural groups that really want this white space thing to happen. And so there is an enormous amount of potential here for this. And people at the FCC recognize this. Kevin Martin, chair of the FCC, recognized this. A lot of, both of the Democrats, Cobbs and Edelstein, Michael Cobbs and Jonathan Edelstein, have recognized this. But there are some other people who didn't like this idea at all. And it started out being the TV broadcasters who started warning that these devices could cause a great deal of interference on the TV channels, and that they should, and that this is not such a great idea. And they began filing what I would describe as, in my opinion, pretty hysterical protests.
Now, hysterical funny or hysterical as in screaming and yelling?
A, hysterical, and B, funny.
Okay.
One which I wrote about 2006, this is the Association for Maximum Service Television, described, they actually went to the FCC and they said this would be a pandemic, It would basically destroy television signals. Television signals across the United States would be distorted, and that white space devices would become these little germs that would destroy television. Then religious TV broadcasters joined in this, and the National Religious Broadcasters Group publicly declared that if white space was licensed and authorized, this would be the greatest technical blunder in U.S. history.
I mean, it's amazing. It is truly amazing. Okay, so it's here are all the people who are against it. It's the wireless microphone people. It's the TV broadcasters. It's the cable industry. It's, to some degree, the cell phone industry. The wireless cell phone industry has come out against it. It's basically all the major production companies, the Broadway League, the NFL Network, the Grand Ole Opry, the Country Music Association. This is to borrow a phrase from Hamlet's mother, this is a "methinks thou must be protesting too much, m'lady," kind of moment.
So what's up? I mean, why is Broadway? Why is Rob Zombie and Dolly Parton gotten on board?
They're concerned that, I'm not going to say that there aren't some legitimate questions here. They are concerned that this technology has the potential to interfere with these other things.
With wireless microphones.
With wireless microphones. Now, it has to be pointed out, and it has been pointed out, that many wireless microphone users in the United States use wireless microphones illegally.
Okay.
That is to say, the FCC created a service for wireless microphone use, but a whole lot of companies basically sold wireless microphone wireless microphones quite widely, so that a lot of people are using them illegally. So we have all these people who are basically using wireless microphones in this unauthorized way, now saying, "Hey, we were here first. We got this first. So even though we're not really authorized to use this, this spectrum the way that we've been using it, we don't want anybody else using it because it'll interfere with us."
Were these folks supposed to get licenses to use these microphones?
There are certain groups that are supposed to get licenses, and then a whole lot of people just basically have been using them, and now there's a whole. Everybody agrees that basically these groups need to get amnesty, that, there needs to be some kind of a licensing license service, and everybody who's using them needs to get amnesty. I mean, I'm not against shutting. I don't want to shut down Broadway. I don't want to shut down NFL football. I'm not a bad guy. I don't want to shut down country music. I don't want to shut down Dolly Parton. So obviously there should be amnesty, and this service should be authorized. But it is a little strange for them to be going around saying that white space shouldn't be used by anybody else.
Now, this technology that you mentioned, the white space technology, should it also be able to recognize
microphone? Yes, it should be able to recognize a used channel.
Okay.
And it should be able to not recognize a used channel. channel. We should be able to recognize the recognize a used channel and not use that channel if it's already being used.
So in layman's terms, it basically means that, you know, it won't use a frequency if it turns out there's someone on a wireless microphone or there's a TV channel or any other particular use using
that's
this little bit of.
Absolutely right. That's the point.
This is sort of the technology we've been promised for a long time, isn't it? You know, that we could have lots of devices using spectrum sort of without regard to what the spectrum is allocated for, because they would be smart and would not interfere with each other, so that we wouldn't have to have just the FM band and just the AM band and just the TV band, but we could just have a big chunk of frequencies which could be used for many different purposes because these devices would be smart enough. I mean, isn't we've been promised this for quite some time?
Well, this is a tremendously promising technology and could create these things called community mesh networks, where basically people could have their own community TV station or their own community radio station using this technology. And that's what Motorola and Microsoft and Google and Philips and Intel and Hewlett-Packard and a whole other device manufacturer, Dell, they all want to provide this to the public, and they've all been petitioning for this for a really long time. And now the Federal Communications Commission did a whole bunch of tests, and what its Office of Engineering and Technology concluded was that using spectrum sensing technology and using what are called satellite geolocator devices, the concept works. You can create these devices that using this sort of dual system of protection will allow you to use the white spaces without harming other areas. They basically said that this concept works, and now they're working out an order in order to implement this, or in order to allow the industry to implement this. As we speak, the broadcasting industry, the wireless microphone industry, and every other industry that doesn't like this is basically bearing down on the FCC, bearing down on Congress. They got 30 members of Congress to write a letter to the FCC against this. They've gotten, as I just mentioned, 110 famous rock and roll stars, or at least a lot of them used to be famous rock and roll. Peter Frampton, the Eagles, Neil Diamond.
That Don Henley doesn't like anything. He hated the downloading, and he hates the white spaces.
He seems to be willing to sign anything saying that he doesn't like those sort of things. And so, you know, there's a tremendous amount of pressure bearing on the Federal Communications Commission. The Federal Communications Commission is going to vote on this on Tuesday. And so I want to make a point here, and it's an interesting historical point to me, which is why is this happening? Why is it that we've gotten this far with the Federal Communications Commission on this particular issue? And I think that there's an important point to be made here. As you recall, and I'm sure that you're still aware, in 1999, the FCC authorized another service that could be used by the people, and that was low-power FM. We've talked about this, and it's still a going concern. It authorized a low-power FM service that would make it reasonably easy for people, even in cities, to create low-power FM stations. The National Association of Broadcasters went ballistic on this, and they got it stopped on the congressional level. They got Congress to pass a rule that basically said you couldn't have a low-power FM station in the first, second, or third adjacent next to an existing full-power FM radio station. And they basically stop low-power FM in its tracks. The problem that they're having this time, and, you know, this is with all due respect to Free Press, the Media Access Project, Public Knowledge, and all these other groups that have been pushing for white space for a long time, the New America Foundation and all these other great groups that we write about at Ars Technica and that are really great. The problem, of course, is that with their advocacy alone, this would never have gotten as far as it got. The reason it's gotten this far is because the device manufacturers want it. Google wants it. Microsoft wants it. Philips and other device manufacturers have pushed really hard for this. And it's really their political and economic power, especially Microsoft and Google, I think, that has allowed this to go as far as it has gone. And that brings up a media ownership lesson that I think needs to be remembered here.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we no longer exist in a country where, as in the mid-20th century, one organization, one company, ran the telecommunications system and owned the principal device development system, that being AT&T. The fact that we don't exist in a country like that anymore is the reason why we're able to have this debate about white space, because the media ownership system that we have in the United States is broken down sufficiently that these groups are not of one mind as to how to run our media system. In other words, we've got not only economic competition, but we've got political competition here in the United States. And that's why this white space thing has gotten as far as it's gotten.
Now, that's an interesting take there, Matthew. I mean, because in a lot of ways, what you're also arguing is that beyond merely device manufacturers, right? So what you were referring to is that we had AT&T and they had their subsidiary Western Electric, which made all the phones and was the only company allowed to make phones.
That's
only
right.
Phone equipment. What you're arguing now is that it's not just a matter of the facts of a Sony or a Philips or other device manufacturers, but a company like Google or Microsoft are functioning like an AT&T. In this debate, that they are acting, you know, and that they can be a counter to the power formerly held much more monopolistically or oligopolistically, like the National Association of Broadcasters, that they have they're able to find a seat in this debate.
What I'm arguing is that because of the diversity mm-hmm. of players right now. We can have this debate.
And you can have them be able to find some coalition with these public interest groups, because clearly they're working together, because you've also seen some of these players like Google get on board with the debate over network neutrality.
That's right. But there is a downside to this issue. I mean, there's another lesson to be learned about this. Although I appreciate Google's role in this, I want to point out that on the same day that the FCC is going to be voting on this order, they're also going to be voting on the authorization of two mergers for big wireless networks, one of them being the Sprint Clearwire, the Sprint Clearwire merger. And Google is going to be in on that. Google is a big investor on that.
Hmm.
And some of the public interest groups have also been arguing at the same time that it's really important to scrutinize and make sure that that when these two groups merge, that they make it very clear that the open device, that there's an open device requirement, and that they will not squelch any manufacturer who wants to create devices to connect to this.
And now, just a little background on that. Sprint is a major player in cellular technology right now. Used to be kind of a big player in long distance. And Clearwire, if I'm not mistaken, has been a big player in this technology called WiMAX, which
right.
is another form of wireless networking, which is supposed to be a higher speed, more robust replacement for the traditional Wi-Fi networking
right.
that most of us use.
Right. There's two big platform players. One is WiMAX, and the other one, of course, is Long-Term Evolution, which is what AT&T and Verizon are going to roll out in the 700 megahertz spectrum that they bought. My point is that it's a little nervous-making to me that Google is getting into this area, that it's starting to get into this area where it's starting to invest in these wireless platforms. And once again, we're starting to see a device manufacturer potentially also becoming a big player in the telecommunications industry. And that needs to be something that's watched and monitored, because it's precisely because we have this diversity of ownership right now that we can have this debate about white space. And if we didn't have this diversity of ownership, we couldn't have this debate about white space. This is the 40th anniversary, as you know, of the Carter phone decision, which was a very important decision, which is constantly being invoked and reinvoked in telecommunications. 40 years ago, there was a guy named Thomas Carter who built this radio device you connect to a telephone. And AT&T basically said he couldn't use that device, because AT&T had a rule that said basically no foreign device, to use their jingoistic term, no foreign device could be attached to their network. And in 1968, the Federal Communications Commission said, forget it, you can no longer do that. And they basically said that anybody could attach anything to the AT&T network as long as it didn't hurt the AT&T network.
I think that's an important point to highlight there, because I think for a lot of listeners, I was not alive in 1968, and so I think a lot of my listeners were not, although I'm aware of the history, and I remember the changes that happened during my lifetime, and that people probably don't realize that it used to be if you wanted to have any sort of device, whether it was a fax machine, which was invented in the 60s, or an answering machine, it had to come from AT&T at a very, very high cost. So people used to lease their phones for as much as several dollars a month, whereas, you know, now, of course, if you want to buy a phone, it could be like $5 at the dollar store. But people used to actually have to lease their phones because purchasing a phone was almost ungodly expensive at that time. And so that's a really big decision, you know, even though it kind of undergirds the progression we've had now.
In the mid-20th century, as it was said, you could buy any phone you wanted from AT&T, or you could lease any phone you wanted from AT&T as long as it was black. Any color phone as long as it was black. Botched that one up. But anyway, the point is that there was very little diversity, and AT&T basically controlled everything. It really wasn't actually until 1978, because AT&T fought the Carter phone decision even after it was implemented for about 10 years. It really wasn't until 1978, 1979, 1980 that the impact of the Carter phone decision was made. Now, the basic concept of Carter phone is accepted by the Federal Communications Commission in many areas, and that is that when a new service is created, anybody can manufacture anything to attach to that service. That's one of the principles that's being adhered to in the XM-Sirius merger, which is that the new interoperable receivers that will be built for the XM-Sirius service, you can build any kind of interoperable receiver you want. It can't be restricted to anything. Everything that you want to put together on it is legal. XM and Sirius can't restrict anything. That's the basic Carter phone principle.
And so what we have, though, is you're pointing out, is the danger. Is that so we have this diversity of people who can work, of companies and players and actors who can work in this arena of telecom policy. It really just didn't exist 50 years ago. But we also see some accruing power. We see a company like Google, which has its tagline of, you know, don't be evil as its company.
Do no harm.
Do no harm. And you know, in many cases, you know, working side by side with folks in the public interest community, especially in terms of ensuring a free internet, with advocating for network neutrality policies, but also working in its own, you know, financial self-interest. It's sometimes, I think, it's difficult to know exactly when the scale is going to tip, you know, when are they going to be acting more in their own financial self-interest rather than what appears like the public interest.
Well, the best thing to do, I mean, obviously the way to work the system in terms of trying to build a consensus for the public interest is to side with the various financial players in the industry who seem like at this particular moment they're operating in the public interest. It's not so clear when Google buys DoubleClick that that's in the public interest, but it is pretty clear that when Google pushes for unlicensed devices, that is in the public interest. So you basically look at the interests of the various players and you pick and choose which are the best options you have in terms of alliances, and you make them. It's a lot easier to make those kind of alliances if there's a diverse array of owners in the telecommunications sector who are all competing against each other. You've got a lot better chance of finding public interest partners in that context than you do if there's just AT&T, which owns Western Electric, which was the condition in the mid-20th century. That's my point here. One of the reasons why this white space debate is at all even possible is because of the diversity of players, because we've got all these new entrants like Google and even Microsoft. I mean, Microsoft is a good guy in this thing.
Right.
I mean, you know, Microsoft used to be, and still is for lots of people, Dr. Evil. But in this particular instance, Bill Gates and the rest of Microsoft are pushing really, really hard for these white space devices. So
let's bring it down to the vote. It's coming up on November 4th, the same day as the national presidential election.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that the chairman of the FCC seems to be feeling favorable towards opening up white spaces for development for wireless, unlicensed wireless devices, especially towards broadband. What's it look like with the rest of the commission? You know, two Democrats and two Republicans.
You got two Democrats. I'm not clear what Robert M. McDowell will do in this.
He's a Republican.
I've read him saying some some sympathetic things about it. So I don't really understand what he's going to say. He's a bit of a wild card on these various things. And I don't really know what Deborah Taylor Tate, another Republican, will do about this. But she often follows, on these particular issues, she often follows McDowell's lead. So maybe she'll go with him on this. It looks like there's a clear majority at this time.
Mm-hmm.
What the big broadcasters are asking for right now is they're asking for a delay. They're asking for a 70-day public comment cycle on the Office of Engineering and Technology's study of white space use, which they don't like very much because it argues that the technology is feasible. So what they're asking for is they're asking for a 70-day public comment cycle on this. And it doesn't really seem like that is necessary because they've all filed already their critiques of the Office of Engineering Technology's report. So it seems like what they really want is they want 70 days to build an enormous crescendo of fear and FUD.
To work.
Fear, uncertainty, and doubt about this.
They want to work Congress to intervene.
And they want to work, and they want to work Congress and see what they can get out of
Congress. Boy, it's a rotten time to try and work Congress, though, isn't it?
Well, it's a rotten time trying to work Congress, and also there's a bunch, they can get a bunch of people in Congress. They've already gotten about 30 members of the House of Representatives. They can get some other people. I've got no fears about that on their behalf. But there's also a lot of people in Congress who don't come from the Broadway district where Jerry Nadler comes from. He wrote an op-ed piece in the New York Times against white space. He represents Lower Manhattan and Upper Brooklyn, and obviously he represents the Broadway district, and the Broadway district clearly got to him and got him to write this op-ed piece against white space earlier this year. But there's a whole lot of people, Congress members across the United States, who are in rural areas or are in light industrial areas where people want more access to broadband and they want more opportunities in terms of broadband, areas of Brooklyn, areas of Wisconsin, where there's these little mini Silicon Valleys popping up. And then, of course, there's Mike Honda of Silicon Valley, who's also very supportive of white space. So I don't think that they're going to find that it's going to be as easy for them to clobber white space in Congress as it was for them to clobber low-power FM. Because, again, there are these areas of the United States where there's that, where the device manufacturers have a significant political power.
Right.
And they're talking to those members of Congress and basically saying, we want this. Don't crush this. Let us have this.
And this cuts across the aisle. I mean, this is neither a Democratic or Republican issue. You've got Congress people of both stripes.
This is a bread and butter issue.
Yeah.
This is one of those bread and butter issues in which there's two groups. There's the districts where people are representing incumbent spectrum holders who are nervous about this. And then there's the areas which were full of people who feel like they're sort of the have-nots in the spectrum landscape, and they want this. So you've got this kind of division between these two groups, and that is manifesting itself in terms of how this is playing out in Congress. And, it should be mentioned that this is not the only thing that is the important issue that's going to be decided on, if not by the FCC, about the FCC on November 4th, and that is that on the Supreme Court, Supreme Court is going to decide about the FCC's fleeting expletive policy.
Oh, is that on the 4th as well?
Supreme Court's going to hear.
Oh, they're going to hear it.
Fox
okay.
versus FCC.
Which means
Fox.
they won't be giving out an opinion, but they will
be giving out an
case.
Opinion, but they will be hearing Fox versus FCC on November 4th.
Boy, it's a big day all around.
Big day for the FCC on November 4th. Nobody will be paying attention.
So, Matthew Lassar, once again, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, as always.
At arstechnica.com, lots of great reportage on what's going on with the FCC and how it affects our rights and abilities to communicate freely and receive communications of value freely. And your own website is Lassar's letter on the FCC, which is www.llfcc.com.
com or net.
So, Matthew, once again, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
And this has been Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. I'll be back in one more week with more news and views on our media environment. In the meantime, go to the Media Geek website at mediageek.net. where you can also find the Media Geek blog, and at radio.mediageek.net you can download the program or subscribe to the podcast or listen to it right there in your browser. It's all there at mediageek.net. If you have any comments about the program, please send them to me, Paul at mediageek.net. Thanks for tuning in.